I think 2024 can be defined as politics and sport. So if you're not into either, it's not going to be a brilliantly fun year for you. But about 50% of the world's population are going to go to the polls this year. A number of countries already have. Obviously, we've got the US election in Q3. We've got a presumed UK election. We've got India, Pakistan, Russia, Korea. Basically, it feels like everywhere in the world is going to vote this year. So it's a huge, huge year for politics. And that obviously has massive ramifications for clients.
That's Joe McDonald, WGSN's Director of Insight, talking about how election fever will grip the globe in 2024. I'm your host, Bethan Ryder, Editorial Director of WGSN, and you're listening to Create Tomorrow. So we often forecast up to 10 years ahead for our clients, but in this WGSN episode, we're going to be a little more current and throw our spotlight on 2024. Applying parts of our STEPIC methodology, Joe and I will take a look at politics and discuss what it means to have so many elections globally. Plus, under the topic of creativity, we take a look at entertainment, from the movie Gladiator to Glastonbury Festival. We'll update you on the biggest events that offer brand opportunities in 2024. And even if you're not part of a brand, you might just find out what you can look forward to yourself from a personal perspective. So, Joe, welcome to the podcast. Just then, we heard you telling us that this year will be a big year in politics. And what will that actually mean to us, consumers and brands?
Well, it's interesting because obviously politics and voting is hugely important. So, you know, we want to stress that. But from a consumer perspective, it presents quite a lot of uncertainty. So I'm sure when people think back to elections that they voted in within the country that it's happening, it completely dominates the discussions across the press. It's kind of the leading item on news across the week. It's the water cooler chat. It is, you know, hugely, hugely important. And then if you're the US, it dominates the rest of the world as well. As we ramp up to the US election, there'll be more and more coverage about what's happening in the US and the implications. So from a consumer perspective, generally speaking, it dominates conversations. People tend to get a little bit fed up with it, especially in the run-up to actual election day. It presents quite a lot of uncertainty for businesses as well, depending on which party gets into power. It can result in exchange rate fluctuations. So if you're a business, you know, importing, exporting, it can result in a massive fluctuation. You know, we saw that in the UK with Liz Truss last year, you know, huge drops in the value of the pound. And that has real implications to businesses. Supply chain disruption as well, depending on which party gets in. You know, if you think about particularly goods coming from the East, it can have a huge implication for clients. So by and large, from a political standpoint, 24 looks to be one of slight disruption for consumers and businesses. And that's going to be really, really interesting.
Presumably, this actually presents quite a large opportunity for brands because there is research, right, that shows that people don't trust governments, but if you become a trustworthy brand, you're likely to keep your people, right? You keep your consumer.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're interested in exploring that more, obviously, the Edelman Trust Barometer Survey that has been running for the better part of 20 years really tracks that over a very long period of time and shows the steady decline in trust in institutions, governments, the kind of more fluctuating but upwards increase in trust for brands and businesses as well. Consumers looking towards businesses to solve problems. Now, I think at a really, really practical level, this year presents quite a lot of uncertainty because of all the things that we know have been rumbling away in the past, things like climate change, cost of living, obviously the political element as well. So there is a space for brands to provide certainty, safety, security to support their customers. So this is things like if you were thinking about increasing pricing in 24, maybe don't, you know, maybe keep it consistent and have that as a marketing hook. We understand the challenges that people face. We're going to keep prices consistent this year. If you do have to raise prices, doing it in a transparent way and explaining why that is happening also helps consumers understand a little bit more. You could even go as far as to offer discounts, loyalty discounts, and then anything in the health and wellness space. You know, anything, we talk about restorative nesting, people spending time in their home, making their home a comfortable space. But anything that helps give consumers peace of mind, helps them find balance, all of this is really, really important.
Yeah, so offering stability and reassurance. Let's go away from the doom and gloom, or slightly doom and gloom, and move to some lighter events that are happening this year. So it's a huge year for sport. I know that's one of your sort of favourite topics as well, Joe.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously we've got the big one. We've got the Olympics happening in Paris across summer. So from kind of mid-July until mid-August. The Olympics is obviously fantastic for a number of reasons. It brings countries together. You get to see a whole range of different sports that you didn't even know existed. It is a huge opportunity for brands as well. All of the main sponsorships have been agreed and have been kind of signed years in advance as part of multi-year deals. But there is also a opportunity for brands to play around this space. Now, obviously, you have to be very, very careful. You know, you can't use the Olympic logo. You can't necessarily even allude to the Olympics. But what we see around any major tournament is this thing called the participation effect, which is you start watching stuff on TV and you fancy having a bit of a go at it. In the UK, we see it every single year with Wimbledon. You know, the 2 weeks at the end of July, June, when Wimbledon is on, everyone just becomes obsessed with tennis. You know, we have screens across the UK that play it in kind of public places. And as a result, for the next couple of months, you cannot book a tennis court because everyone suddenly remembers how much they enjoy playing tennis with their friends and you know, going out afterwards and things. So the Olympics represents that, but on numerous fronts. So, you know, I'm not necessarily saying that everyone's going to go out and try javelin or shot put, but it will help consumers fall in love with the sports that they already have done or, you know, have experimented with in the past, or encourage them to try something new as well. So there's a lot of opportunity here.
And have you seen some brilliant ways in the past that come to mind of people that have maybe tapped in to the Olympics in maybe an unusual way or an exciting, pioneering way? I know you say they can't use the logo, but there must be some other ways.
Yeah, I mean, brands get very, very creative around it. And, you know, it's the same for any major sporting event, actually. You know, playing around the fringes is super important, trying to capture that participation effect. I think the best example I've seen recently is not from the Olympics, but it is just a fantastic, fantastic execution. And that is the French Women's Football Federation and Orange, the telecoms network, did a fantastic campaign for the Women's World Cup last year. And I think it's just a brilliant execution. It's playing on a lot of themes that we talk about at WGSN, you know, from a tech all the way through to an identity space. And do go and check it out. Absolutely.
Sport is such a great unifier. I'm really excited about the new sports. Obviously, the Olympics is looking at capturing audiences that perhaps are younger and wouldn't normally watch it. And I'm just thrilled about some of the new sports this year. I think breakdancing, it's going to be one which is just, to me, that'll just bring all the 80s back. And I'm just really thrilled about that. What are the other new sports that will be coming in?
So we've got sport climbing. We've got skateboarding. We've got surfing. I must admit, I'm not an expert in any of these sports. So I don't know how they're going to be graded. I don't know how you can rank someone in kind of breakdancing ability. But I think that's part of the magic of the Olympics, is finding out and diving into sports that you don't know anything about.
I'm just really excited about seeing some new stars that are from places that you wouldn't always expect. I think it's going to be so much more inclusive.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we saw that in the UK with Luke Littler, who's a 16-year-old who got to the final of the PDC darts tournament a couple of weeks ago. And really, it is only sport that can surface a new cultural icon like that. Because, you know, from a brand perspective, you wouldn't necessarily select Luke Littler, you know, age 16, to be a brand ambassador. You know, you wouldn't necessarily select darts as a sport to kind of go after. You know, on paper, it doesn't have as wide appeal as someone like Neymar in football. But, you know, he's just emerged as this people's champion across the UK, and he's kind of been catapulted into stardom, into fame, and he's become this new cultural icon. And that is something that really only sport can do. So the Olympics represents a good opportunity for that, and especially with all the new sports being added.
I think the other exciting thing about some of these sports is that I know that the skateboarding almost became part of the 2020 Olympics, and Letitia Buffoni, there's a lot of female, obviously champion the females, but there's a lot there that I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see, as a woman, I'm very excited to see the female contingent, the stars of tomorrow. I think it's going to be a great one.
Yeah, definitely. And then obviously there's other things going on as well. So we've got the Euro football tournament happening in Germany and a few other places a little bit later in the summer. So it's a very, very big year for sport across Europe. We've also got the African Cup of Nations earlier in the year. All of the usual events, you know, the Super Bowl in the States. The appeal of the NFL is growing internationally. You know, historically, it has been a real US-focused sport. It's not played that many other places. But the cultural significance of the Super Bowl is huge. You know, the halftime show, everything around it.
So come on, because I know we always get a report out literally almost as it's happening, not quite, but just after. Who is tipped to be the halftime show star this year? Do we know yet?
So we're only a couple of weeks out, and I believe it's Usher, actually. You know, obviously it is such a huge cultural moment, and in the States in particular, even if you're not into the actual sport, you know, American football, as they call it over there, you know, everyone tunes in for the halftime show, and it does pop up these cultural moments as well. You know, various kind of disastrous halftime shows kind of building and destroying careers across the last 20 years or so. And for brands, again, you know, you can't use the logo, you can't participate directly in the campaigns, but particularly in the States, you know, the Super Bowl represents an enormous opportunity for F&D brands, you know, FMCG brands. And even when you think about your social activations, playing in the fringes of the space, reusing a meme or reusing kind of language, music that's been featured, there's a real fertile ground to play there, definitely.
Yeah. And I think this whole sport, year of sport, just taps into this thing that we've been tracking for such a long time, the outdoor boom, right? And which was compounded by lockdown, but even more of a chance to shine and for people to get involved in. So let's just talk about film, because last year we had this blockbuster return to cinemas after sort of such an awful time for kind of cinema and entertainment from the pandemic and lockdown. And also we've had the strike. So it's been a bit of a rocky road, but blockbuster return last year with Barbenheimer. So what's going to get us into the cinemas this year? Is there going to be another blockbuster like this that everyone will be talking about? What do you think?
It's a bit of a year for sequels, prequels, franchises. So the big one from my standpoint is Gladiator 2, which is currently in the works. Paul Mescal is playing Russell Crowe's son, I believe, although there's a few scripts floating around. Paul Mescal, obviously very much a Gen Z heartthrob, hugely popular off the back of Normal People, After Sun, huge following on TikTok, you know, memes kind of created off the back of him. So that's likely to be the main blockbuster. But we've also got Dune 2, the second part of Dune.
Great, I love Dune.
Yeah, fantastic. Sci-fi fantasy world, fantastic costumes. Because the story is so long, it's billed as Dune 2, but it's actually just the second half of the kind of the story. So it's not necessarily a sequel, it's just a continuation. Timothée Chalamet and Zendaya.
You've got me already, both of those.
So two more Gen Z heartthrobs as well. We've got the second Joker film, which is also starring Lady Gaga alongside Joaquin Phoenix. We've got Deadpool 3. We've got a Return of the Lion King. We've got Inside Out.
Inside Out. Inside Out's a great one, isn't it? I did read something about that Inside Out is the animation where it talks about sentiments, right? Emotions. And they've added anxiety, I believe, which is very interesting, I find.
Yeah, absolutely. Very much in tune with the times, definitely. So there's a lot of, as I said, it seems like it's a bit of a year of sequels, franchises, etc. On paper, at this stage, it doesn't seem like there's anything as at the same scale as perhaps Barbenheimer and the things associated with that, the kind of massive uplift in the popularity of Pink we saw around Barbie. But then equally, you know, we could, by Q3, Q4, we could all be wearing gladiator skirts and that could be dominating the Halloween costumes. You know, and I, for one, am okay with that. You know, any excuse to dress up as a Roman gladiator, you know, why not?
I'm just thinking of breastplates and things like that. That's hilarious.
Exactly.
Chainmail skirts. I wonder, will it influence fashion towards the end of the year? I can see a few looks in festivals. I can imagine that going down at a few festivals, because that's something we also cover, right? We cover We actually did festival fashion on the podcast last year, and we send photographers to Coachella to capture things and how things are looking. So I know we've got your biggies every, you know, Glastonbury, Coachella. Tickets are getting very pricey. Are people still going to go to festivals, Joe? What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Glastonbury tickets, I think they're up to about £370 now, plus a booking fee. So it is a big old chunk of money. We're obviously in a cost of living crisis, and especially for younger consumers, we know that the wages aren't competing with inflation, and that is having a huge impact on the way that people spend money. So at the moment, what the data is showing is that people are currently dipping into savings to try and maintain their lifestyle, but that is definitely going to tail off. This is very much happening in, across EMEA and the US in particular. That being said, fun is so important. You know, recreation, leisure is so important. So actually, what's going to happen is people are going to keep on attending festivals. They're going to keep on spending the money. But what they're going to do is they're probably going to cut back on other areas of life, either eating out less, one less takeaway, et cetera, try and maintain that. And then for brands playing in that space, attending festivals are expensive. You know, if you think about the fact that Glastonbury is the better part of £400 just to walk through the door, you've got your transport, your accommodation, your tent, you've got the festival fashion. Quite quickly, this is a really quite serious amount of money for a what is effectively a holiday. So for brands, it's about anticipating these events and really putting themselves in the consumer's shoes, which is focused on value, focused on price, and thinking about how you can support them doing that. And even in other spaces as well, you know, there's very, very fertile ground for FMCG brands here as well, you know, offering festival sized packs or discounts if you buy in bulk. Group shopping is something we've seen in China and across Asia, hasn't translated so much in the West, but it could be an interesting time to experiment. If you're a camping brand, can you do a deal on 6 sleeping bags?
Yeah.
For a group of friends who don't have the equipment already. You know, I'm being a little bit glib, but there's lots of ideas there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that people won't give up the fun. And I think they won't give up what we write about a lot, which is collective effervescence of just being together with a lot of people, because people, I think, are still missing that. I still feel like the ramifications of lockdown and the pandemic have meant that we are more fractured. And I think people want to come together in those moments. I, for one, have gone on my credit card to take my 2 daughters to see Taylor Swift in August, because I just was like, we've got to experience this. It's going to be amazing. Something we can all do together. And who wouldn't want to see Taylor Swift, as far as I'm concerned? Amazing. So, and you're right. I think I don't eat out so much anymore. So that's just a case in point. You know, there's a sacrifice there already. So I think you're right. People are still going to want to do these big events. That's what you remember, right? That's how you build your memories.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a huge opportunity, because I imagine that you're probably going to come away from that Taylor Swift concert, despite the price of the tickets, probably with some t-shirts or some Taylor merch. So there's a big opportunity, and we're seeing particularly Gen Z treating these events more like big ticket important events, and they want to remember them. So the importance of merch is definitely coming back.
Well, yeah, I'm never forgiven. At some point in my life, my partner decided I should do a clear out, and I cleared out my Live Aid t-shirt, and I've literally never forgiven him, because that might even be worth something one day. So, Joe, we've heard a lot, and I know there's a lot more covered in the report as well. We just sort of touched the surface, really. But for you personally, what's your highlight going to be for 2024?
I think, for me, it's got to be the Olympics, because it is just this lightning in a bottle moment where you come into the office and you're sat around the water cooler and somebody asks you if you saw the judo last night. And you know, you didn't, but you then go and watch the highlights, and it throws up these characters, and sport captivates and dramatizes in a way that, you know, I just don't think anything else can. And I just think it's going to be brilliant, and it's really feels like the first proper Olympics since COVID. So that's it for me. What about you, Bethan?
I'm quite excited, as I've said already, that I have got excited about the Olympics because of these new sports. And Damon, my partner, does a very good moonwalk. So I'm going to be grading him against the moonwalks in the breakdancing. But yeah, that, and obviously Taylor Swift. Thanks, Joe. That's been really interesting, and sort of a year ahead that's got doom and gloom a little bit, but also these moments of fun and for people. So lots of opportunities there for our clients. It's fantastic. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you to my guest, Joe McDonald, WGSN's Director of Insight, for describing the year ahead. And there's one more thing to add to your calendar for 2024, and that's our next Create Tomorrow podcast, where we'll be exploring the colour of the year and why we'll all have a crush on apricot. That episode airs on the 12th of February. If you're a WGSN subscriber, you'll find many forecasts on today's topic on our site. And if you want to find out how to subscribe, head over to wgsn.com to discover how you can get access to our service. We're constantly publishing new content focusing on how we can design a brighter, better future for all of our industries. And these now include food and drink, interiors, beauty, fashion, and consumer tech. We'll be back in 2 weeks for our next episode. And in the meantime, you can catch the CEO of WGSN. That's Carla Buzashi. And you can find her next week on our other podcast, Lives of Tomorrow.